Hello, welcome to another episode of the Django Chat podcast. We are back from our summer break, and in this episode, we'll be talking about Django 4.0. I'm Will Vincent, joined as ever by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will. How are you? Good summer. Good summer.
Yes, good summer. A little bit of a break. We're back. We're going to be back to our bi-weekly schedule. Lots of guests lined up, so we didn't tell people we were taking a break, but we took a little break this summer, and yeah, we're both excited to have new things going. So this episode, 4.0, we're going to talk about there's a bunch of Django news, talk about our summers. So maybe just on the podcast. So yeah, bi-weekly going forward, I looked at the stats. We started this February 1st, 2019, after a couple false starts, and there's been over 300,000 downloads, which is a lot or a little, depending how you look at it. Currently episode 98, and reaches a couple thousand people a week. So very happy with that. No sponsors, but you know, at some point, if somebody wants to sponsor it, or if we get large enough, we'll do that. But that's not really why we're doing this. So just put that in there.
Yeah, no, you know, if you want to chuck money at us, do, but as Will says, it's not really the point, is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's really just our time and the hosting costs, which are minimal, and we get a lot out of it. So what's going on, Django? So DjangoCon US is coming up in end of October. Signups are free. It is online. Definitely, we have a link. Do that if you haven't already. Django 4.0 just this morning, right? The feature freeze or 4.0. Where is
well,
that?
Well, it's just it was
the feature freeze.
Yeah, that was last week. So last week was the feature freeze, and then that's just like that's essentially mental. That's the hardest bit of the year. It's like because you've got all these things that you'd like to get in. Like all these things, you know, this massive long backlist of, oh, wouldn't it be good if we didn't have it? And there's only so much time and so much energy. And we had a really good push to get that in. And then Maris, bless him, he's release manager this time. So he takes all the slack. He takes all the flack, and I just try and pick up what I can around it. And then, you know, next time it'll be my turn and he'll be laughing and I'll be sweating it. But he managed to get that out late on, I think, last Monday night. And then, yeah. And then that's it. And then now you go out, download or run your test suite against Django 4.0 A1. So that's the Alpha 1. And then there's 5 or 6 weeks for the Alpha period. And that's when, you know, we've really got to find the first wave of issues and tell us about those. Mm-hmm. And then we can fix those for the beta. And hopefully there's a few less things in the beta. But again, we need testing all the way through. And the more testing we get during this pre-release phase, the better, because you know then we get to, you know, 4.0 final in December, and you know there'll always be regressions, but you know hopefully no major showstoppers the day after the final release.
Right. Well, this year there's two releases because the 9-month schedule sort of works like that. So it feels like, I mean, on my end, just updating the books and stuff, it feels like more, but it's really just we're in this 9-month schedule. More or less indefinitely until something arises.
Yeah,
right?
So it's 8 months. So that means that there's 3 releases every 24 months.
Was it 8 months?
Yeah, it's 8 months. So August, April, December. August, April, December.
Okay.
August, April, December.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in 2021, there's April we had, and then there'll be December as well.
Yeah, that math checks out. That's the kind of math problem I've been giving my oldest daughter in. I think she's better at it than I am.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you know, all those logic ones, like, you know, John's taller than Sally, Sally's taller than Tim. Who's taller? They're just like, yeah, they got my wife's brain on that. So lucky.
No, but it's children, isn't it? They've got these the kind of the capacity to employ reason that you've sort of lost as a parent.
Right. Yeah. So we'll talk about 4.0 and what's involved in there. But summer. How was your summer?
To be honest, I needed it. There's like, it's been crazy. It's not just work. It's this whole pandemic ongoing. So like, it's still 2020 as far as my brain is concerned. And I was struggling. I was like, not struggling, but just the thing I've realized, like for years and years, I've always had loads of balls up in the air. I've just been juggling away and juggling away. And I've just found myself not able to make progress unless I sort of really focus on one thing and just I focus on one thing and I can get that done and then I can focus on the other. And that's, you know, if you read productivity textbooks, like Productivity 101 is focus on one project, put your energy on that, get that finished, move on. So, okay, so it's not rocket science, but it's kind of like a marker of the low level stress that there just is with this whole environment.
The background of anxiety.
Yeah, and, it's that if I'm not really conscious about that, I've been struggling. So, you know, to make progress on, 4.0, to get through the feature freeze, that was like, okay, I've got to really head down and focus on that. And, you know, looking at the open source projects that I maintain. So after the 4.0 feature freeze last week, I was able to spend time getting compatibility with 4.0, provisional compatibility, because, you know, there might be issues that get revealed. But if REST framework won't even test against 4.0, then it's very hard for people to test with REST framework. So, okay, let's get REST framework 4.0 compatible, at least on the main development branch there. And I was able to work on that, and then I put out a release for Django Filter, which is now 4.0 compatible, and a release for Django AppConf, which is now, you know, there were, with AppConf it's crazy because there haven't been any code changes for years, but every time the Trove classifiers on PyPI get updated, the ones where it says, you know, this is compatible with the Django framework, I get open tickets going, this isn't compatible. I'm like, did you try testing it? Because it really is. There's no code changes. The tests will pass, but okay,
you're such a saint on these things.
We'll do a new release with the Trove classifiers. And so anyway, AppConf has now got official Trove classifiers for 3.2 and 4.0, which it was missing. Looked at Django Compressor. That's essentially compatible. There's a few test glitches in a Ginger 2 version 3. I can't get my head around Ginger 2 3. The issue. But other than that, it will run. You know, if you're using Compressor, that will run. So I saw David Smith. He put out Crispy Forms with 4.0 compatibility. So, you know, if you're using all these big packages, they should already be 4.0 compatible thereabouts. There's no reason why you can't test your code on them to find the bugs. Hang on. But anyway, the point I was making was I had a bit of time to work on the open source stuff, and now I've got time to work on Daphne. That's next up. So Daphne's been waiting for an update for a while, but I just haven't had the capacity to work on anything. So it's very much I'm doing these things kind of serially at the moment. I think, as I say, that need to do things seriously has just been a marker of stress, a marker of, you know, yeah, stress. It's no other word for it. It's been a really difficult 2 years, and I think acknowledging that is perfectly okay.
Yes.
How about you? How was your summer? How was your summer?
I agree. How honest do I want to be? Not a lot of work stuff. The goal was to have a couple hours a day, just all the maintenance things that I need to do. So we still have the Django News newsletter that Jeff Triplett and I do. That's still going weekly. That's not that hard. That's a fun project because it's not a huge amount of time. It takes 2 hours a week. If I'm crushed or Jeff is crushed, we can alternate. That's a fun one. So that's pretty easy to do. Yeah, I've been working a lot on the 3.2 updates for my books. I've gotten in this pattern where sometimes I'll have just cursory updates where I just go through the code, make sure everything's fine. And sometimes I have a buildup, as you were saying, with 4.0 of all these things I want to change. And for 3.2, that's been the case. So I'm going Windows first. I bought a Windows laptop. I've been doing all sorts of stuff with that, using pip, not pipenv, adding black, just across the board, adding a lot of updates. So it's taken a little more time. And I was really trying to get it done before the summer, and it just didn't happen. Yeah. And, you know, the reality is everything still basically works. You know, Django is quite mature. So there's one or two small things, but it's more of a third party situation. So I'm racing to finish those updates, and then I'll do the 4.0. That's been good. I mean, personally, I've had a child during lockdown, and I don't have as many children as you, but
not yet.
Kids in the summer need. I'm done. Kids in the summer need to be entertained. Yeah, yeah. So, no. You know, lots of, life force being expended, not all of it towards Django, but that's fine. DSF, we Django Software Foundation, we've still done a number of things. So we had the survey, so I helped lead that. We partnered with JetBrains. That's concluded, actually, so we're waiting on them to compile the results. But we got more responses than last year, I believe. And so that should be great. Yeah, a bunch of just DSF. DjangoCon EU went off, went well. There was a whole bunch of work around that.
Yeah, I thought that was super.
So yeah, so just, I had, now that it's September, I'm back to the co-working space I was at before. Still got to wear masks. Yeah. But the first week back, I was just like a blob. Like, I didn't know what to do without expecting to be interrupted every 15 minutes, which has been the reality working from home with kids in the summer the past 3 months. So, yeah, but it still feels nice to code, still feels great to write. So those are all good things.
Yes.
And looking forward to, you know, switching my brain to professional things as opposed to just personal things all the time. So, yeah. And I met, you know, and you and I are both, you know, as fortunate as it comes, I think, with these things. So just acknowledging that COVID's still here and it's not gone away.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't trade. I sort of joke the summers in Spain are very long. The kids have 12 weeks off school, which, you know, it's just mental amount of time. And I joke about it being too long, but I wouldn't, you know, am I going to trade that for, what do I want to do? Work? No, I want to spend time with my kids, and that's fine. And then when they go back to school, then the autumn comes in and it's like, okay, a different routine. That's fine. One thing I want to cut back to was the JetBrains survey, because that's really great. Over the summer, we had the Google Summer of Code, which went really well. So we had two projects for Django, one on to add a Redis backend, and another working on the internals of the migrations, engine. So we're rendering models using project state rather than, you know, blah, blah, blah. It'll speed it up. It'll be faster, and there's some important steps there. So that was a successful project. But the Redis one directly came out of last year's survey, because we did the survey. Do you use caching? What do you use? Okay, so, you know, three times as many people use Redis as any other backend. And it's like, well, we've got three Memcache backends in the core. Why haven't we got a Redis backend? And so, okay, we put that up as a Google Summer of Code project, and that's got done by Danielle, and he's done a great job. Nick Pope really helped with the review there as well. And so that, you know, that's directly out of the survey. So having the survey leads right into Google Summer of Code, which leads into the improvement of Django.
And that's great to... And that's really great to hear, actually, because I think part of it is there's no human interactions, right? So like you and I, there's been no conferences. I see numbers about people who listen to the podcast, but aside from a token email, I don't have a real sense of its reach or the newsletter or all these things, right? And so that's really gratifying to hear. Yeah, because the survey last year was quite a bit of time. And that's exactly why we do it, right? So it's nice to know that there is that link.
Yeah. But anyway...
You know, finding out, because we don't track anything in Django, you know, by design. So if not for the survey, we don't know in any way, you know, how the community is using it besides anecdotes, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the sort of thing we're going to put telemetry
in. That's great.
So, fine. Anyway, just before we move on from Google Summer of Code, I just want to say, because we had Wagtail come in under the Django org this year, and they had three projects. I think they'd have taken 20 projects. There's so many, so keen, so many ideas, so many mentors available. But they had three projects that they worked on. We'll have to get Dawn on to come and talk about those. But what was really nice is that Wagtail had applied to Google Summer of Code before, and they hadn't got in, but they were able to come in under the Django sort of org, and we've been in. Done it, I think, almost every year since Google Summer of Code has been running. And then, you know, hopefully next year, Wagtail can then apply on their own, saying, look, well, we came in under Django, the Django org last year, and we had these three successful projects, and, you know, now we can go on our own. And then maybe we can do the same maybe for Jazzband. I did mention it to Yanis, but I think we've got to plan it a bit more in advance to see if they've got mentoring capacity and all those things, because otherwise it would just fall upon Yanis to... you know, mentor him, right. And he can't do that by himself. It's something that I want to try and at least have a discussion about. But it worked really well having Wagtail sort of apply with Django, and so all in all, it's a really successful Google Summer of Code, I think. So thanks again to Google for putting that on again.
Yeah, thank you, Google. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and all these things are there to be done if there's funding available if people put the work in.
Yeah.
So speaking of community, so I wanted to bring up again before we get to the 4.0 updates. So one of the things also I caught up a little bit on open source, there's this awesome Django repo that there was one before, and then I started one years ago now, 4 or 5 years. And Jeff Triplett joined in a year or two ago, which has been great to help. And somebody submitted a PR saying, hey, you should reapply to put it on the official awesome list. And during this week I had back in the office in the afternoon, I was like, okay, I'll do that again. And did that, spent a couple hours, submitted a PR. It wasn't a perfect PR. The maintainer is wrote a number of comments, half of which were helpful and half of which were not helpful. And so the end result is I said, okay, it's your football, but I'm not spending time on this again, which was the exact same reaction I had a couple years ago when I tried to do it. And so it really made me think about, though, Django and the work that you and Marius do as fellows, because I understand how you can get to the point where this person is at, where you just get bombarded with PRs that aren't perfect and you just rage yell at people about it. But at the end of the day, it's open source. And, it, you know, if you do that, people are going to, you know, for me, I don't care. Like, I'm old, I'm experienced, whatever. But if I was a newcomer or I was new to open source, to, you know, the reality is that was hours and hours and hours of time and throwing it off. And then you just get the ball swatted back, not in a, hey, you need to fix these things, but like, you fucking stupid asshole kind of way. And it's like, well, that would be really bad for a new person, I think. So anyways, I tee that up as, how do you and Marius not be like that, given all the PRs and all the things and all the years? I mean, maybe it means summers where you take a little bit of a break, but I don't think Django is like that. Certainly, I hope Django isn't like that for newcomers.
So first up, sorry for your experience there, because even though you're experienced and, you know, thick-skinned and all the rest, that's still not pleasant.
Well, I see why he said it, but it also means I'm unengaging with the project forever. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter, but, you know, you have a bunch of those micro things over time and a project will lose.
Yeah.
I mean, with momentum.
So, I mean, something that I'm really conscious of with Django is that we still have a very male and largely white contributor base. And part of that is economic privilege, but, you know, part of it is just open source isn't very welcoming so, you know, to make sure that you're doing everything you can to not put off potential contributors is to make your project more sticky, is to make it a better project, is to make it more open to contribution. But that's not always easy. You know, a contributor comes and maybe PR's terrible, perhaps, and it's like, this just isn't right. And how can I respond in a way which is suitable? And you just, first of all, you have to be lined up and wired to give that response. So you have to want to give that response. And if you don't want to give that response, then perhaps you should, you know, step away from, you know, triaging, because that's going to be a part of it. And you know, there's just no way around that. I don't think there's any room anymore in open source, if there ever really was, but there certainly was a culture of it, but a culture of you know, just harsh responses. I don't think there's any room in open source for that anymore. And so if you're not prepared to be opening and welcoming, then, you know, step back. Sometimes, does it get too much? Yeah, I mean, sometimes we'll get a difficult contributor and Maris will say, hey, Carlton, can you take this one? Or I'll say to Maris, can you take this one? And we're very conscious of what the other one's doing and we try and look after each other. And sometimes you just have to let an issue lie. But the last thing you do is come, you know, not deliberately, is give the harsh response. And some, you know, sometimes, oh, that was a bit too harsh. It's, oh, okay, well, that's a misunderstanding of language, or, you know, the tone could have been friendlier, or, you know.
Yeah, there's some cultural things sometimes.
But you just have to try, to be honest. And I feel sorry.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for the guy who's in a position where he feels he needs to respond that way.
I can see how you can get to that way with a project. I mean, just the awesome Django repo itself, I had a backlog of PRs and I felt like I couldn't handle it. And I was going to step away until I mentioned it to Jeff and he said he would come on, and he was able to do stuff for a couple of months. And so now I have the space again. So yeah, I can't imagine running, you know, that thing among others solo, but I think there is that awareness of how you do it. And, you know, but to speaking about Django and how we make it more approachable, that is something you've spent a huge amount of time in. I don't know how we, right now it's really just an add-on to Django cons when they happen, when we can, but figuring out if there's something that DSF or others can do to make it easier to contribute to Django, you know, because the code is relatively mature. There's all these doc stuff. I don't know the answer to that of working group, but
one thing,
2022, if things normalize, doing something around that would be important.
One thing I want to do that I've been on the list for a while is recognizing the contributors better. So for 4.0, hoping to put a bit of time in over the autumn, David Smith's been taking an interest in this as well, in just drawing it together as well as we can without putting too much work into it, a list of, you know, the people who've contributed and trying to call out some of the contributions. And you think, oh, why does that matter? Like, shouldn't we just get on with coding? Well, no. Because, you know, saying thank you, that in itself is a good thing. But also, you know, new contributors, that to call out their contributions, to give them something objective to point to, mm-hmm. that really helps contributors. You know, it's all right if you're an experienced contributor. If you're, you know, I really don't need any one particular pull request to put on my CV. But if I'm a new contributor, especially, you know, one who hasn't not necessarily got all the time in the world to donate to open source until they get recognized, then having some kind of objective recognition is important. But then there's also so much sort of hidden work that goes on. I did an awesome workshop over the summer whose name totally escapes me, but it was about on this very topic. I'll put it in the show notes. I really can't remember it right now. But, you know, like, I don't know, the people who run the internationalization, localizationist, and the translation.
Well, I was thinking of that,
like,
because
what do they do? What do they even do? Like, you know, there's all these hidden jobs that they do. And so if we can call out what they do and say thank you, then that becomes the basis of kind of like a how-to, like, because there's a list of jobs that all need doing. And then it also becomes a kind of the basis of a call for volunteers. We say, look, there's all these jobs that need doing, and they're in the hands of two people who've been doing them for a decade. And one day those people are going to need to step away or just need a break, right? And can we make that into something that's more addressable? And so recognition is not only important in itself as like kind of morally the right thing to do, it's also about maintaining the sort of stability of the framework as we go forward, as the people who've been doing all this invisible work need a break or need to step away or, you know, move on to other things. Can we replace them? Do we know what they're doing? Can we replace them? Have we got easy, addressable jobs? So a new volunteer comes along and says, hey, I'd like to help with the localization. What can I do? And it's like, well, to be honest, short of going, you know, the contributor guide is there and you can go and trawl through. But that's quite a hard thing to get. It's quite a hard thing to get going with. What we don't have is like these clear, identified jobs that a new contributor can take on. And so part of the recognition effort is about identifying those jobs and making them addressable to new contributors.
Yeah. And it's just extra work for the people already doing the work is part of the issue. But at the end of the day, recognition is easy to provide. I mean, the internationalization, they've moved to the forum, the Django Project forum, off of Google Groups, because that's something. The DSF emails, people can write in on the forum. A lot of them are around someone saying, I want to translate it into this or that language. And they weren't able to find where the internationalization group is. Yeah. So we get a couple of those a month. And we talked about this before.
Okay, but the
great to have someone from that team on to talk about the work that they do, because it is completely invisible to 99% of Django users.
Yeah, and like the contributing guide is great, and it is, in a way, it's kind of there, but it's so dense and so unapproachable that people have repeatedly people are like, I can't get started, and there's no good saying, well, it's in the contributing guide, because the contributing guide just isn't working. So, I mean, it is.
RTFM.
You know, it is okay. It is working, but not to the scale we want, and not, you know, the number of times a potential contributor has come up and been, well, have you got an easily addressable thing that I can take on? And the answer is, do you know what? Not really. And that kind of breaks my heart every time I have to say it, because it's like that's not Django being easy to contribute to where it could be.
Well, we have these conversations both to have them and also so others can hear what it's like in our positions and the things we're trying to do. So 4.0, is there anything else you want to, or can we move on to what people should expect in 4.0?
Yeah, we just talk about 4.0. Like, I mean, the big thing for me then was we're moving to zone. We're changing the time zone implementation. So for years, we've been using PyTZ, and PyTZ was installed when you installed Django. And in Python 3.9, the added to the standard library was this this zone info module, which is kind of a time zone implementation. That from 4.0, that's the default time zone implementation in Django. So if you're doing everything in UTC, like you know, the docs say use UTC in your database and do all your calculations in UTC and then just localize in templates and forms and things like that, it'll all just work perfectly. But if you're using the PyTZ localize or normalize APIs, where you want to convert it into a time zone, then do some arithmetic, and it might have gone over a date time, a DST transition, so you have to normalize it again. If you're doing all that stuff, then you'll need to audit your code. And there's a transitional setting, so you can set this transitional use deprecated PyTZ setting. And then there's a PyTZ deprecation shim package, which you can use to wrap around zone info and give it a PyTZ like interface, and then when you call that in your code, it will raise a warning, and that enables you to find your warning. So that's super.
And that's a big deal. That's one of those things. I think time seems not complicated until you get into programming, and then you realize, oh my gosh. And I did want to call out, we'll put a link to it. Russell Keith McGee had a great talk, 2018, all about time and Django and Python. Learning about time, that's one of those things for students, for newcomers, saying, you know, it's a great rabbit hole to go down. It's like, well, time's easy. Is it? No, you know, like, no. And what?
No, I mean, it's
seems like it should be.
It's far too baroque for words. There's this abstract card, TZ info. And then there's in the standard library, there's date time, time zone, and then there's PyTZ, and then there's now this zone info implementations of this. And none of them are really compatible. They don't compare against each other, and it's a weird and wonderful world, shall we say. But anyway, it's one of the really important reasons for you to test during the pre-release period is, like, yeah, you know, this should all work. You know, if you're doing the right things, it should all work. And if you are using the PyTZ APIs, you're just going to have to adjust your code. And the PyTZ deprecation shim package has a really great migration guide that shows you, you know, how to adjust your code. But if there are other issues that come up, then we need to know about them, because zone info is the future of time zones in Python. It's time for us to make this change. And that will be the transitional settings available all through 4.x, the 4.x series. So till Django 5.0, you can use this, but ideally you would migrate sooner rather than later and drop using that deprecated PyTZ and use zone info. So that's that's one big thing. Functional unique constraints in the database, so you can have kind of computed constraints, so you know that there's only one that's less than this or something like that. You know, I'm trying to think of an example. Maris is very excited about those. The Redis cache backend we've talked about. So that's not as complex as the, you know, as perhaps Django Redis, perhaps, which is that has more options. But if you just want to spin up a Redis cache with Django, you don't now need to reach for a third party package.
And I did want to, I was mentioning this to a couple of people who are programmers but not in the Django world, and it is important to note, this just means official Django support. It's not that Redis is now downloaded with Django. Instead of having to reach for a third-party package, I had a couple people make that confusion, so I just wanted to mention that. It's more just, there's an official support, and Django Redis is still an awesome package, and hopefully over time, if we need those things, they'll be moved in.
But. Yeah, I mean, so the thing with, so like... with the ORM, for instance, we support MySQL, Postgres, SQLite, Oracle, and so the ORM needs to capture what's common to all four, and it needs to abstract over differences. Same with the cache backend. You know, we've got the Memcache backends, we've got the Redis backend now. It's a local file cache, but they offer a kind of unified API, and then it's beyond that API, it's open to third-party packages to go further. So, you know, there's lots of Postgres add-on packages that, you know, make more use of things that Postgres can do, which perhaps SQLite or Oracle can't. And, you know, so there's always going to be room for a Django Redis package, which goes beyond what we're going to offer in core.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, I remember spending a day, 2 days, trying to work out which Redis cache package I should use out of the options and how to configure it and, you know, all these bits. And then, you know, a couple of years later when I needed to do it again, I had to spend that same day, you know, did I decide last time? I can't remember.
Well, that's like me with Heroku deployments for the book, because Heroku has not updated their docs in years on the matter. And I've done it so many times, and every time it's like, what a waste of time this is.
Okay. And then the other
button.dev.
No, well, hang on. One more feature I wanted to mention for 4.0 is, I mean, it's all the whole load of minor features, but the other one is template based form rendering. So, you know, where you've got your form as P, or your form as table, or your form as UL, or that's all now moved to the template system. So a few years ago, we moved the widget rendering to the template system. You could customize the widgets, but who's customizing the actual widget? No one really. What people wanted was to customize the sort of the HTML that's generated when you get in your template and you just go form, you know, like output the form. And now that's so the default kind of proxies to as table, but if you can override the default template and you can have it as you want it. This is going to really, it's going to be interesting how this interacts with the likes of crispy forms and floppy forms, because those libraries they may be that they're not needed anymore, or, you know, aspects of them aren't needed anymore, that they can drop away. But that's quite exciting, because say you want to have forms that just by default render, I don't know, using your fancy, you know, CSS framework that you've got, you can create the templates to match that framework.
Well, those defaults like around template forms, those are very confusing to newcomers. That's something that I have like a paragraph to sort of say, hey, this is just a part of Django that you need to know. Why does dash whatever, you know, dash P work?
Yeah.
So that's,
but I mean, so
revisit that to make sure I'm accurate for 4.0.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, ideally, people would stop using as table, as P, as UL, and what they'd use instead.
Well, because now you would just put it in the view, right? You would. Just,
well, no,
historically, you would change.
You just use the string render. So you know we've got double under string, the string method, where you would just output the form, and that's always proxied to the as table. It's always the same output as table by default. But if you wanted to customize that, you would just customize the default template. You'd overwrite the default template to have how you want the form to appear, and then instead of going in your template curly bracket form dot as p, you just go form, and then you just, however, whatever the default string out representation of the form is, it would render the template that you've configured for your project. And then those methods, they can eventually be deprecated more, because there's accessibility problems with you know, and it, like the P element in HTML, it's not allowed to have other block level elements inside it. It's just not valid HTML.
Yeah.
So every time you're using as P, you're outputting invalid HTML. It's not a great thing. And then there's accessibility issues with tables and these kind of things. Now we can try and make those templates better, but ideally you kind of craft your this is how I want forms to look in my project, and, you know, it'd be very easy for a third party package to just come along and say, look, and here's some form, this is a default form template for, you know, Tailwind or for Bootstrap or for, you know.
Well, that sounds like something I should I'm going to play around with that and maybe have a tutorial or two for 4.0. Yeah.
So anyway, that was the 4.0. There's loads in 4.0. It's another massive release. They just keep coming. The community is amazing. And it literally, you think, oh, you know, there won't be much for the next one. And then there's just this huge list of awesome features, plus a billion bug fixes, plus, and it just works. And, you know, you update pip install dash u Django, Py test to go, 5 minutes later you're like, oh, it passes, deployed, and it's, you know, Django's just amazing, and yet another blinding release.
Well, and Python's still taking over the world. I think it's officially, or pretty close to officially, the most used language now.
I saw that. It's gonna take over C,
and
it's incredible.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll wait for it. When 4.0 comes out, I'll send you the Hacker News link saying, oh, wow, Django's still a thing. I know you love the Hacker News and the Reddit conversations about Django.
What? Don't even get me started. But like, you get down to like comment 2, and it's like, why aren't they using JS framework hotness of the week.com?
Well, I just don't know what the current default hotness is, because back in my day it was Rails, and then is it Express?
No, it's still Rails.
It's not fast API. Like, what?
It's still Rails, and it's still Django. You know, because if you in the real world, away from Hacker News, away from Reddit, in the real world, these mature frameworks. And then the exciting one in the Python world is Fast API. Lots of people are using Fast API, and that's super, and that's great, and that's awesome. And then Flask has just done a big update, and it's a really vibrant time in the Python ecosystem. But that's a different question from these threads on
boot camps. I mean, just as a quick aside, I mean, there was let's go into this. So boot camps are struggling. Team Treehouse is having some problems, among others. But there remains, I think of this because I teach, there remains this problem of how do you get people into coding? And it's just hard. I think at the end of the day, there's only so many people who can pay out of pocket and have the time to teach themselves. You need, even if you had the perfect curriculum, people need a company to sponsor them. They need to be able to take out loans to go study this stuff. It's just a really hard problem, and there's not that many people who can pay $30 a month and get very far. Yeah. And so all these companies, you see, if they take outside funding, which they usually do, they veer towards being internal training tools for corporations who say, General Electric says, let's skill up 1,000 people to be engineers as opposed to something else. It's a hard nut to crack. There's Free Code Camp, which is amazing, and then there's kind of nothing else as I see it out there. So if anyone has any answers, that's something I think about a lot. How do you, aside from saying you just need to keep it small, keep it solo, keep it sustainable, and over time provide these materials. And what do they teach? I don't know of boot camps that teach Django. Maybe they teach Flask. I still think they're all JavaScript-y 12-week things. You have a CRUD JavaScript app, and then you're released into the wild, and it's kind of sink or swim.
Yeah. I think the point you made about like people not having the capacity to teach themselves, because it takes ages, right? It just takes, you got to have so much time to sit at the keyboard being confused that very few people have that time. And they're all the same demographic. And that ties back to the contribution problems we were talking about.
Well, right. That's the Coursera and all these places, where people are taking 100,000 people sign up for a master's course on AI. It's like, yeah, well, they already all have a master's and went to Stanford. Yeah. Anyways, as an aside, that was unfortunate. I don't like to see ed tech companies not do well. But so be it.
So button.
What else?
Mentioned. So button.dev.
Yeah, so you can still sign up for easy deployment.
That's coming. It's been coming forever. But this juggling balls and COVID issue, so that's coming on really well. It's coming together really nicely. I've got the first users on board, Solo and team, starting to play with it and make sure the edges are right. Works just as it's a principle. Keep it simple. It's a guide how to. It's a community of people doing it the same way, and it's some tooling. And the question is just my capacity to put it out, and because I'm not I'm not funded to do that. It's very much what I can fit in the space around, following, around other work, around my children, around my, family, around all those things. So it's gone slower than I would imagine. But then, everything's gone slower than I would imagine. So I'm really happy. I'm really excited. It's coming very soon, very soon in real terms, over the next period. The people I've got using it are saying, you've thought of everything that I'm concerned about, right? And that's what's nice. That's what I set out to do, because it's not if you're already an ops expert, it's not for you. It might be for the people you're provisioning for, right? Instead of you building this platform for them to be able to provision on, you might just be, hey, just use button. But if you're already an ops expert, it's not for you. But if you're not interested in all that, or you haven't got the time to learn it or whatever, then you know, maybe it'll be an option. So that I'm quite pleased. It's coming.
Yeah. Well, and it's something you can't get wrong. I mean, if someone's deployment doesn't work, that's a real problem. It's not a typo in documentation. It's, you know,
yeah,
the bar is a bit higher with your project than.
Yeah. And also I want it to be easy to use, right? So there's no point having a simple deployment that's just as hard to use as a hard one. And so it's got to be, you know, you might as well just use the hard deployment then, you know. I don't want to give you yet another command line thing where it's horrible and you've got to remember these incantations. And if you don't get the incantations wrong, it gives you an opaque error. I don't want that. If it's taken a little while because of COVID and because of, you know, life stresses, then that's totally fine. That's totally fine. But it's.
Well, that's exciting. You know. I'm ready for it. When you're ready, I'm
so ready for it. Like I just want to get this stuff done. But you know, life has had other things to say over the last couple of years, so that's okay. Slowly, slowly, catchy monkey. It's long haul bootstrapper, not VC. You know, fancy. So you know.
Yeah. Well, every time I update my books, I spend more than half my time on Heroku and SendGrid, mm-hmm. which are the only two things I haven't been able to strip out. And it's just a pain.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would love for, you know, something similar.
Okay, so well, hopefully when you're rewriting for the 4.0 versions, we've got something for you to point to.
You think?
Well,
by December?
Yeah.
You think maybe?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm there, like... It all works. It's all there.
Okay, we don't need to set time. No, but
I've just literally got to wrap up the bits in an order that I can deliver them. So, you know, I'm so bored of having inventory sat on the shelf with it that it's coming, and it's just a question of how I can wrap it up in the nicest way. That's all.
Yeah. Well, on my end, I have finally, in some earnestness, started a Python book. Which is sort of when I get flustered on my Django stuff. So this is, I've been talking about to myself and to a couple other people for a long time. And I bought the domain name, so it's going to happen, right? I spent the $12.
Yeah, yeah, there you are. I bought a domain name. Job done.
It's official.
It's like that South Park thing. Buy a domain name. Profit. What's B?
Yeah, collect underpants. But it's really fun. It's really fun to write something new. I love doing the Django books, but they first came out 3 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's a different thing to rewrite them as opposed to something new. And you know, there's so many good Python books out there. I mean, Eric Mathis's Python Crash Course, for example, is a fantastic book. So I'm having to think a lot about like, well, what would I do that's different?
Yeah.
You know, besides my voice. So it's, you know, I'll talk about it when I have stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
but
cool.
It's been very fun for me to do. It's been educational just to go and revisit, to think about what level to introduce things, how can you incorporate projects and maybe multi-step. You know, so you have a Mad Libs, and then that's a basic thing with variables and strings, but then maybe you can add in functions and logic, and you know, how do you make a progression for people? Yeah. So that's a fun project, and I can't put a timetable
no,
on
no,
it,
no,
I'm excited
no, no.
to have something else to work
yeah,
on.
Yeah, no, that sounds really exciting. I mean, I think the Python Crash Course, and then the other one is Automate the Boring Stuff, right? I mean, I think if those are the two.
Yeah, Al's book.
Those are the two.
Canonical.
If you're sort of looking at them and saying, well, what different can I offer? Then that, you know, that's an interesting thing to be thinking, I think.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you get more advanced, there's, you know, Fluent Python is among the best. Yeah. And I think he's got an update coming out.
Yeah,
soon.
I'm so excited about it.
He's been working on it. That's an amazing, you know, next tier book. So I'm really interested to see. So it would, yeah.
The one.
There's a lot out there. But anyways, it's giving me an excuse to buy even more Python books and, you know, see what I like and don't like and how it's presented. And
yeah. The one I picked up recently was David Beasley's done Python Distilled. Which is just
I know who he is. I didn't realize he had.
Yeah, so he did the Python Essential Reference years ago and was sort of updating it. And I think over the course of it being updated, it became this Python Distilled. So you know,
because he does all the compiler courses.
Yeah,
right?
It's really
that's like his
stuff. And he dogs on typing the whole time. So you know, I'd like to get him on and see if he'll talk to us about
dogs on Python.
No, not Python.
How dare he?
Not Python typing.
On typing, wow, what that just came out like a couple days ago. Wow, as ever, Carlton, you're an aspiration to me. So, Anyways, I think that's it. We have, right? Is there anything else beyond? We have a whole number of guests scheduled.
Yep.
So it won't just be us yammering on. It'll be.
No, I like it when we yammer on. We haven't yammered on in private for ages.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? We don't have any sponsors, so.
Yeah, our show. We do what we like. What was I going to say? did I mention to people to download the 4.0 alpha and test against their code? Did I mention
that? You should. That'll be the top link. Fine. Please do that if you're listening. That's very important. And yeah, thank you for mentioning the Redis survey thing. This is a small thing, but honestly, that's exactly the example of like, it's hours and hours of time kind of in the dark. And just knowing that makes me feel justified in all the time on the two surveys, because I didn't really know that it did much.
Yeah, no, I think...
Frankly.
No, really, it's interesting.
And it's something I want to hand off to a new board member next year. Yeah. When we have a new board saying, Anna and I have a list of things saying, okay, there's a number of things we're doing now. And, that's one of them. I think it'd be better to have someone fresh, but also... Yeah, it is helpful.
I mean, but if as you've done it, you can outline the steps that are involved, then at least then you've got that how-to, which is the, who's going to volunteer to do this,
Right. Well, and, Tim Graham had done the last one five, six years before. And so the one last year was a Google form. I got a lot of feedback from you and Marius and Jeff and some others. And then this year was quite a bit easier. There were still 20% new, and then we remove some things. So I think it's in a refining stage, yeah, which I think is an easier place, but a better place. With this AI component that JetBrains have, the kind of long form answers, we can decipher that. We can do a lot more than just check the box.
Oh, okay.
So I'm interested to see, because that's what they do with the Python survey. They're able to do stuff around that. So they had a number of questions around tooling and other things, and they can, we will see, but they say they can analyze that in a way that obviously a Google form cannot.
It's nice. I mean, they've already got that capacity, but it's nice for them to lend that capacity to help, us, and maybe they do it with other projects.
And they're the biggest sponsor to Django. And actually, one thing for next year, this is an important point, translations. So we didn't have time this year to translate the survey, but that's something I really want to do for next year. And I will have the time so that we can put it out there, and either JetBrains or we can ask the community to translate it so it's available in other languages, not just English.
Okay, let's call it quits.
Lovely to see you, Carlton. Congratulations to you and Marius on 4.0.
Yeah, well, that's Manny Max. Congratulations, Marius. He's been driving that.
As ever, djangochat.com, chatdjango on Twitter, and we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
Yeah, join us next time. Bye-bye.